Exegetes had to do it.
So the,
as long as no blowtorch is involved in that exercise.
So we're picking up Sefer Shmuel Aleph in Perek Yud Ches, chapter 18. And where we had left off is we had learned the very large Perek of Yud Zayin, which had the phenomenal story of David and Goliath, of David and Goliath. And so we're picking up right after that battle finished. And we know that, we remind ourselves, and I constantly try to remind us, that the prakim, the chapters that we have, they're not necessarily Jewish in their structure. They were put in by secular printers. We use them because they're easy. But if you look in an actual sefer, the psukim kind of continue to flow. That when David returns from the battle, from battling Goliath and being successful, he kind of had almost like an exit interview with Shaul, where Shaul was having a whole dialogue with him. We pointed out the question that maybe the obvious question is that it appears that Shaul doesn't seem to recognize him. Many of the Farshim point out that it was maybe that he didn't recognize that David had this in him. That no one would have thought David to no one would have thought him to be able to pull this off. So Pasuk Aleph in Perek Yud Ches is picking up on that. And the Pasuk reads, Vayihi kechalosol daber el Shaul. And it was when David finished his conversation speaking with Shaul, the nefesh Yehonasan nikshara benefesh David. The soul of Yehonasan, who we know is the son of Shaul, and we've seen him quite a lot, nikshara became attached to the soul of David. Vayehavehu Yehonasan kenafsho, and there was a love that Yehonasan had for David, like the love that he had for himself. The pasuk makes it sound like there was an instantaneous friendship, which is obviously hard to imagine, because friendships and admiration and a type of connection between people, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen immediately. What it most probably means is that the bond between David and Yonasan began, and it was a bond that was going to be a very strong bond, and it was. Really, David, until this point, David played a much more of a private role in the palace of Shaul. We noted that in the very same parak that David was anointed kind of secretly, quietly, by Shmuel to be the future king, in that very same parak he was kind of selected to come work in the palace, to come and be the musician that would play music for Shaul whenever Shaul was kind of feeling down. Perhaps David and Yonatan met at that time. The pasuk never told us that. This is the first we're hearing of a friendship between David and Yonatan, and it's also it comes right after David defeating Goliath. And at that moment, and we're going to see some examples here. At that point, David now he's on the front page of all the papers. Everyone knows who David is, including Yonatan. It talks about that it specifically uses spiritual terms for their friendship. It says, nefesh nikshara benefesh, that the soul was intertwined with another soul. That their friendship was something that was a spiritual bond where each one respected the other. It didn't necessarily make sense for them to be friends, because the crown prince seemingly was Yonatan, and the only one holding Yonatan back from becoming king is really David. And David has been anointed as king, and presumably, we had pointed this out, David was never told how he was going to actually become king. For all we know, going through David's mind right now, Shaul has to die. However, he dies for David to become king. And many times that's the natural way it happened, that a king is king until he dies. So at the death of Shaul, who would be the one holding back David from becoming king? It would be none other than Yonatan. And so they had every reason in the world, perhaps, not to be friends. In Pirkei Avos, when the Mishnah is trying to draw us an example of a type of an ahava, a type of friendship or admiration that is not that will be everlasting, it gives the example of David and Yonatan, the example where the love is not, it's not based on anything. Pirkei Avos speaks about when a love is based on, or an admiration, a mutual respect is based on something material. So then when that something material, you know, goes away, so then the friendship will go away. If I'm only friends with someone because he's able to take me places because he's very wealthy, well then if he runs out of funds, and then I'm not going to be interested in being friends with him because there's no more wealth. The friendship between David and Yonatan is considered to be something that is not, it wasn't dependent on anything. And the pasuk here seems to be announcing to us that it began at this juncture, and this is not the last we hear about it. We're actually going to hear about it in another pasuk. So David and Yonatan have this connection. There are some who point out that from here, the Radak mentions it. From this point, and you'll tell me if it's true as we go along. From this point until the end of really Shmuel Aleph, every time Yonatan's name is mentioned, it's with a hey, a letter hey. And there were only two other times previously that it was with a hey. Meaning previously we've seen Yonatan's name as Yonatan without a letter hey. And twice in the context of him when he was going on the secret mission to ambush the Plishtim in Perek Yodalad, twice we had his name with a hey. From here on till the rest of the Sefer, whenever his name is mentioned, the Radak tells us it's going to be with the letter hey. The So the Alshech, who's an Achron, a later commentary than the Radak, he has a theory that the letter, that once with this announcement of David and Yonatan's friendship, so the letter Hey is a representation of the name of God. The Hey, we know sometimes just the letter Hey represents the name of Hashem. It's the letter that in the unique four-letter name of Hashem, there are two-letter Hays. It plays a prominent role, and it was there to show the spiritual nature of their friendship. And then obviously the Alshach, he needs to also explain, well, why was it mentioned twice in Perek Yedalit? So he says there it was, because Yonatan was going on this ambush, and he needed protection from Hashem, and so the letter Hay is kind of there. I think the explanations are not as sound as the observation. The observation is clear, and that's what the Radak offers us. The Radak just he doesn't give a reason. He just says this is our tradition, that this is the way it should be. It's almost like he's giving us like a grammar lesson. If you're sitting down, the Radak is writing before there's no printing press. So anyone who's going to write a Sefer Shmuel is going to be copying from a previous existing Sefer Shmuel by hand, and so the Radak just brings that the Mesorah is from the beginning of Shmuel until this point, you should always spell it without a hey, except for those two times in Perek Yedalet, spell it with a hey, and from here on in, you spell it with a hey. So he's giving the what. We have some later commentaries that provide a little bit of a why. Again, it sounds like the what is more sound than the why. Pasuk Beis. Vayikacheu Shaul bayomahu. And Shaul took David, him as David, on that day. Velo nisano lashuv beis aviv. And he no longer allowed him to return to his father's house. Once you see the second half of the pasuk, so you know the fact that it's saying, it just says that and Shaul took him. Well, Shaul could be, the last pasuk mentioned Yonatan and David. So who is this talking about? So it has to be talking about David, because the second half of the pasuk says, "Velo nisano lashuv beis aviv." He no longer allowed him to go back to his father's house. They can't be talking about Yonatan, because Shaul is Yonatan's father. Previously, we had discussed in Perek Tes Zayin, and we saw this again in Perek Yud Zayin, that David was on David had off time. David would spend a lot of time at the palace, but then he would be back in Beis Lechem, still working for his father as a shepherd. To which his father, when he went to the battlefield that had Goliath, it was, if you remember, right, he was sent by his father in order to check up on his brothers who were on the battlefield. So previously he had a setup where he didn't necessarily work full time. Now it sounds, the pasuk makes it sound like Shaul is taking him and conscripting him into royal service full time. He doesn't want him to go back to his father's house. In each of the psukim here, we're going to see the hints that Shaul is beginning to become suspicious of David. Shaul, what does Shaul know? Shaul knows that he made two errors. He knows that Shmuel told him that his first error, that his monarchy would not last forever. And his second error, he said, he is going to be disposed as king. But he doesn't know to whom. There were these ambiguous phrases where Shmuel says, like, you know, your friend who is kind of better than you has been chosen. But he doesn't know who. Shmuel never tells him. And no one else ever tells him. But all of a sudden we have a character like David, who is an impressive character. We saw he had the pasuk described him having it sounded like he had a lot of accolades. And now you had the entire army of Israel was not willing to stand up against this Goliath. And the underdog went ahead and volunteered for the fight, right? Play it all over in your head. Not only did he volunteer for the fight, when Shaul offered him armor, he initially said okay, but then he shied away from having any armor, from having any real weapons. He came with a walking stick and a slingshot, and with one shot was able to kill Goliath, which any religiously sensitive individual is going to understand that David was not just a mighty warrior, but David had God on his side. We're going to see that mentioned in this parak again. So if you're Shaul and you're watching this take place, and you know that there's someone that might take your place, you're going to begin perhaps to think things about David. Now, there's another reason why you're going to think things about David, and I don't know. I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. Shaul is not going to become suspect of someone that he doesn't know or B, he doesn't see often. If something great was happening away from Shaul and the army and the palace, and some random Jewish man was succeeding at something, Shaul wouldn't necessarily become nervous. It's the natural inclination of a person is to become nervous with what's around them. Meaning, David is the most likely candidate from those that are around him. And we all know everything, and we know that David is the actual future king. But Shaul didn't know that. But who else, if Shaul was going to become a little nervous about someone, it would be perhaps David. And now, with that in mind, you read everything that happens in this parak, kind of little things, it just feeds into Shaul's feelings and perhaps the abnormal way of thinking and the fear that seems to take over Shaul and how he wants to react. Mixed with the fact that we already know that he's been experiencing whatever it means that he has a ruach ra, whatever it means that he is in, whether it's a depressed type of state or what some type of his mental well-being is clearly not well in a mental way, and so you put that all together, it's a recipe for disaster, which we're going to see. The disaster begins in this perek, and it unfortunately is only going to continue. So part of that is you don't want to let him out of your sight. I mean, if this is the individual that might be the one, so you're better off watching him. You're better off keeping an eye on him, because then you'll have your chance to know what's going on. If you let him go back to Beis Lechem, who knows? He could, right, just play with the paranoia. He could lead a coup. He could get an army together. He was so successful. He's the one who beat Goliath. All David would have to turn to the people and say, who would you rather be with? Shaul, who was a coward to face Goliath, or me, who stepped up, was willing to do it, and was successful. So Shaul makes the decision to keep David. What's the cliche? You want your friends close and your enemies closer. That seems to be the thinking. Pasuk Gimel. Vayichros Yonasan v'David bris. David and Yonasan enacted some type of covenant. They sealed some type of agreement of their friendship. Ba'avaso oso kenafsho, again, mentioning this phrase, that he loved, that Yonatan loved David like he loved himself. Which, on the one hand, the Torah gives us a charge of something we're supposed to do that to everybody, right? The Torah tells us in Sefer Vayikra and Perek Yotes and Parashas Kedoshim, "V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha." You should love your fellow like you love yourself. We all know Rabbi Akiva's famous statement, "Zeh klal gadol b'Torah." That's the greatest teaching is "V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha," and kind of everything else is commentary. So that's really every. But here it seems to be highlighting. Now, why, if you were writing the Tanakh yourself, which you didn't, but if you were writing it, and I told you to write the ideas of Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Beis, and Pasuk Gimel, how many of us would formulate it this way, where Pasuk Aleph mentions the relationship with David and Yonatan? Pasuk Beis talks about how Shaul wants to keep David close by, and Pasuk Gimel goes back to the relationship of David and Yonatan and tells how they enacted some type of an agreement, a covenant, what that is, I don't fully know what. Usually when we talk about a bris, so we talk about foreign powers. You know, Avram made a bris with Avimelech. Avimelech was the king of the Plishtim, and Avram made a bris with him. We were told that we shouldn't make a bris with other nations. Hashem made a covenant between himself and the people. What does it mean for two friends to make a covenant, to make a bris? I don't know for sure. It seems like some type of way of saying that we have mutual respect and we're going to be peaceful. We're going to honor this friendship. Well, why would you set it up that you take a break and talk about Shaul? So I think what the Navi is trying to do is trying to contrast the way that Shaul thinks about David and is beginning to think about David, and the way that Yonatan thinks about David. Shaul's thinking about David, in Shaul's eyes, David's stock is going down, and it's beginning to go down, 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 down. In Yonatan's eyes, it's the exact opposite. At the same moment in time that David is beginning, right, the Pasuk had originally told us when Shaul met David for the first time, and David began to play for him, and made him and lifted his spirits. So there the Pasuk used the language of Shaul loving David. Here we're going to begin to see that it's going to be the op, right? We're actually going to see the language of the Pasuk that he's not going to love him, and yet Yonatan's admiration and respect for David is growing. So it could be the flow of the Pasukim is going back and forth between the ideas. So we have fresh in our minds what is Shaul thinking about David, and what is Yonatan thinking about David? And that's going to be something that's going to play out. It's going to come to the to be highlighted even more in the next parak, which is the famous, I believe, either, I forget if it's Yotes or Chaf. I have to review that. We'll get there. The famous Haftorah that we read, called Machar Chodesh, the Haftorah that we read when the next day is Rosh Chodesh. We'll talk about it. It really has no, the only thing it mentions the phrase that tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. So that's the main reason why we read it on a Shabbos where the next day is Rosh Chodesh. But we'll get there.
Is that with the arrows, where he shoots the arrows?
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like we're just missing a big piece of information for them to have such a strong connection. It just doesn't seem that we've seen anything like that before, with it to be such a...
missing a chapter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, until now, they haven't interacted, and now they love each other.
I hear you. I don't have a good...
No, I'm just making an observation.
Right.
We also don't know at all what David's thinking. We know what Yonatan, we know what Shaul's thinking. We don't know at all what David's thinking about all this.
Right. Right. Here, the language, both times, in Pasuk Aleph, it's Vayehavehu Yonasan Kenafsho. And then in Pasuk Gimel, it's Bahava So Oso Kenafsho. It's all coming from the perspective of Yonatan towards David. How do we necessarily know from these psukim that it was mutual? So perhaps we'll get that a little bit in the future. There are times when we're pointed in the direction, you know, the Radak or Rashi will point us in the direction of a medrash that will kind of fill in the gaps. We'll see if we find any of those. Pasuk Dalet, in regards to this bris, this covenant agreement that David and Yonatan are joining. So there seems to be some symbolic gifts that Yonatan gives to David. Again, these are two. Yonatan and David are right now they're considered to be soldiers. In terms of the psukim, we know that Yonatan is an experienced soldier. He's assassinated. He's led ambush. He's been involved in war. As far as the psukim are concerned, David just had his. Even though he was described as a soldier, this was the fight with Goliath was his first time. To which, and that's why his older brother was Eliav was not so happy about David going into battle. He didn't think he had the experience to go into to battle. So, in the context that we're now dealing with two soldiers, Pasuk Dalet reads, "Vayispashe Yonatan es hame'il asher olav." Yonatan took his military cloak, or the regular cloak that he had, "Vayineilu David" and gave it to David. "Umadav" and his armor, "Vadarcharbo" his sword, "Vadkashto" his bow, "Vialchagoro" and his belt, and he gave that to David as a gift. He gave these things to David as a gift, which is some type of showing of the respect, again, from one soldier to the next, you know, and we know that David did not necessarily have a sword. David did not necessarily have armor. Shaul was ready to offer him his armor, and now Yonatan is offering his armor. It's a sign of respect, and it could be, and this is just a theory, that in those days that this is something normal. That, you know, we wouldn't necessarily think, you know, it's so normal for, you know, a friend of mine wants to show me respect, so he hands me his gun and his, that wouldn't be such a good friendship, in my opinion. But, but this might have been normal. Again, it's two soldiers. And they just finished a war. They just finished a battle. Pasuk Hey. Vayetze David b'chol asher yishlachenu sha'ol. Yaskil. And David went out, and in anything that Shaul sent him to do, Yaskil, he was successful. The word Yaskil comes, the Shorish, we're told by Mitzvah Tzion and others, the Shorish is Seichel, the Shorish is intellect, that it was through David's intellect that he was successful. But we see in this phrase that Shaul is beginning to use David for more than just his musical abilities. I mean, the fact that he played a role in killing Goliath, whether that made him have military intellect, or just the fact that he's now going to be a very, you have to imagine, David's probably the most popular soldier amongst his fellow soldiers. He did the impossible. For 40 days, the entire army was intimidated, and he went ahead and won the war for them, single-handedly. So one of the things that Shaul did, the pasuk continues, "Vayisimehu Shaul al anshei melchama." Shaul had appointed him over the other soldiers, over the men of war. "Vayitav be'enei kol ha'am," and it was very good in the eyes of all the people. "V'gam be'enei avdei Shaul," and also in the eyes of the servants of Shaul. David was extremely well respected. So the fact that now he's put, anytime, I've never been in the army, I imagine, it's not, if you respect your commanding officer, it's much easier to follow his orders. David must have been the easiest person to follow his orders because everyone had such great respect for him. Everyone had such great admiration. What might be interesting to note is it says, "Vayitav be'enei chol ha'am," that it was good in the eyes of the people. "V'gam be'enei avdei Shaul," and also in the eyes of the servants of Shaul. But what doesn't it say? It doesn't say in the eyes of Shaul. That even though David is being, you know, his reputation is growing and growing, but not in the eyes of Shaul. And Shaul is witnessing all this. Shaul's watching David's popularity grow and grow. Pasuk Vav. "Vayi bavo'am b'shuv David mehakos es haplishti." And it was when David was when they were coming back, when David was coming back from striking the plishti, meaning Goliath. Vateitzena hanashim mikol arei Yisrael lashir v'amcholos lekrash shal hamelech. The ladies of Klal Yisrael went out from various cities, from all the cities, to sing. The Targum translates lashir as lashabcha, to praise. V'amcholos, they had some type of cymbal, some type of musical accompaniment, as to greet Shaul as the whole army with Shaul and David are coming back. B'supim, b'simcha, v'shalishim, they have different drums and joy with joy and with all these types of instruments. Now, what was their song? What was their praise? Pasuk Zion. Vata'anena hanashim, the women, it doesn't just mean answered, it kind of means call, the Mitzvah Tzion says, it means to call out in a very loud voice. It's the same phrase as, and this is mentioned, where did I see it? It's blocking me now. But that's the language of Vata'an Miriam. By Kriyas Yamsuf, mm-hmm. when Miriam led the women in song, it had this vata'an. It's not just answering; it's calling out in a very loud voice. Vatanena hanashim, hamesachros. The rejoicing and joyful, playful ladies. Vatomarna, and this is what they said: Hika Shaul ba'alafav, v'David v'irvosav. Shaul has struck the thousands, his thousands, and David, his tens of thousands. Now, what the actual casualty count amongst the Plishtim, we were never told. What you do see in Tanakh is there are times when an exaggeration is offered where the regular number is in the thousands, and the exaggerated number is in the tens of thousands. And you can see that in a number of places. And so this might be, most probably is, some type of an exaggeration of number. But Shaul is being put at the low number. Shaul's the king, the sitting king, who no one else knows is that he's not going to be king for long. And yet they're willing to say, maybe there was freedom of speech, they were willing to sing, and David had tens of thousands. There are some commentators. I don't know where this is found, but it's cited in the name of the Netziv. The Art Scroll quotes in the name of the Netziv that this was like the chorus. This was the refrain of the song. So they made a whole song about the war, and the chorus, the refrain was Shaul killed thousands, but David, he killed tens of thousands. Now, we could sit here and we could talk about how Shaul would react to that, but rather than think about it, we'll see. Pasuk Ches. Vayichar l'Shaul me'od. And Shaul became very angry. Vayera be'enov. It was very bad in his eyes. Hadavar hazeh, this matter. Vayomer, and he said, and this is such a telling phrase in the pasuk. Vayomer, he said, Nasnu leDavid rivivos. They've given to David, they've attributed to David the tens of thousands. V'nasnu li ha'alafim, and they offered to me, they attributed to me the thousands. V'od lo achamalucha. What else is there for him? The only thing missing from him is to actually have the crown. And so whether he's right here, it doesn't say that he spoke this, right? The pasuk just says he got angry. It was very bad in his eyes. Did he express this thought to anyone? Doesn't necessarily, but it says Vayomer, and he said, but who did he say to? He's not going to say that to David. Did he say it out loud? Did he say it to himself? But for the first time, we at least see that Shaul is definitely. A couple of psukim ago, we saw the phrase, he doesn't want to let him go back to his father's house anymore. And you and I are sitting here and we're thinking, okay, so he's getting suspicious. Now he throws out, based on the fact that he's growing in admiration amongst the people, and in front and amongst the servants of Shaul. And now he just hears the random ladies of Israel, when they sing their songs of praise, they recognize how David is so much better than Shaul. So he at least in his mind, or if he says it to someone, he voices the concern. The only thing David is missing is the actual kingship. Pasuk Yud. Vayihi Shaul oyein es David me'ayom hahu v'hala. And Shaul had a, like the word ayin, which is an eye, E-Y-E, but here it's kind of being used as a verb. He is going to eye David. He's going to keep a watchful eye on David from now and on, basically from now until the end of his life. Which is still a number of months. The way that this the word oyein, so it's what we call a Korean ksiv. It's written ayin vav nun, and we pronounce it ayin vav yud nun. The ayin vav nun sometimes can mean avon, can mean like a sin, and so there could be an element of this eye that Shaul has. It's not a positive eye, and we're going to see that there are going to be activities, or at least plans that Shaul has, which are clearly negative. Now, you always have to weigh that.
It's usually what?
No. The way that it's written is ayin vav nun, but the way that we pronounce it is ayin vav yud nun. So a possible reason is that when it's just avon, that's something negative. This eye that he's going to have on David is quite the negative. It's quite the negative eye.
Yud shows negativity.
No, without a yud. Correct.
Because
correct. With the yud, we change it to meaning ayin, meaning eye.
Okay. But doesn't he see that there was a miracle there with Goliath? I mean.
So we're sitting here in 577 thinking rationally. I think we're all going to see that Shaul does not think rationally, and it's based on either it's based on the fact that he's king and he's losing his power, or it's based on the fact that he has this ruach ra that comes upon him, and coupled with the fact that. If David is not the actual king, and if that same David, who's not the actual future king, is taking steps to be anti the king, then that's called morid b'malchus. That's called rebelling against the king, which is a capital offense. We know that he's not, and David knows that he's not. But in terms of Shaul, you know, that there could be a thing, meaning Shaul is in the mindset that anyone who crosses him is morid b'malchus and is chayiv misa. So, yeah.
Can I go back for a second? Because I don't like something that I don't, that doesn't connect. And it's a trivial thing, but the yud is keeping an eye on him. That's how it usually is. Without the yud, it's bad, so you don't want to keep an eye on someone.
The shorish of the root of the word is a noun. Is a noun. Ayin yud nun.
Oh, right.
The way we pronounce this word, ayin vav yud nun, I believe it turns it into a verb, like eyeing, with ing at the end. It happens to be this verb is spelt without the yud, which is a different word, avon, right. Which means sin.
No, that's so the interpretation of?
The interpretation is an eyeing that's negative, an eyeing that's sinful.
So which is the sinful one?
The way that Shaul looks at...
Oh, the way that, with the eye, it's simple.
Correct.
Oh, okay, now I got it. Okay.
Correct. So this is...
Whatever David does, it's a no-win situation either.
David's,
in Shaul's eyes, whichever way it's going.
Right. You know,
he's not happy if he's appointed to be the king because...
Right. I, it, In terms of David winning over Shaul, how it could happen, we don't know. But the fact that everything that David does, he seems to be super duper successful at, that's not helping. And it's almost like every plan we're going to see, every plan that Shaul has, like, backfires. I mean, a lot of the idea, and what we'll see it hinted to again, a lot of the idea of having David hang out with the soldiers is to eventually send them back into war. If you send them back into war, hopefully you can figure out a way that he gets killed in battle. And that doesn't happen. We're going to see that he wants him to marry one of his daughters. Because Shaul's daughters will hopefully be on his side and figure out ways to ensnare David that way. And that fails. It's time and time again. Let's continue. Pasuk Yud. Vayimi Macharas, it was the next day. Vatitzlach Ruch Elokim Ra'a El Shaul. Vayisnabi Besoch HaBayis. And the spirit of Hashem, the evil spirit of Hashem, that depressive type of state, came upon Shaul. Vayisnabi Besoch HaAm. So the normal way, if you didn't have your translation, and I didn't have my translation, we would see the phrase Vayisnabi Besoch HaBayis. What would we say? We've heard that, right? We've had that phrase before. We've had that phrase before about Shaul. Vayisnabi Besoch HaBayis, we would say that he prophesied, which is a positive thing. Having prophecy is a positive thing. However, it's attached to this beginning phrase that Vatitzlach Ruach Elokim Ra'a El Shaul. And we saw previously, it was only when he had the positive Ruach Hashem placed upon him that he began to prophesize. The same positive Ruach Hashem that came upon David that allowed David to prophesize. So that kind of forces us, and it allows the Targum to translate, the original Targum in Aramaic, to translate this word, Vayisnabe, as Ve'ishtate. Ve'ishtate means to have a spirit of shtus, of foolishness, of non-coherent thought, right? That when a Navi receives prophecy, it's usually in a sleep state, and they see things in a vision, they see things and they need to interpret it. That same idea of seeing things in a vision and interpreting, so that could also be in a negative sense. If a person is confused, if a person's having a spirit, a moment of confusion, so when it says Vayisnabi Besoch HaBayis, he's not so coherent, right? And so, right, how does your trans? I got the art scroll. What is your
rave?
He's having illusions. He's not thinking coherently. So what's the normal procedure? So we know the normal procedure, right? If he's at the palace and he gets the spirit, you know, upon him in this way. So v'David minagin biyado ki yom biyom. So David would be there. David was called. David would be there playing on his harp, playing in it with his hand, using his hand ki yom biyom, like every day. Meaning this was. On the one hand, we're going to talk about a specific
instance. Translation, because someone, if he himself is getting overwhelmed, whatever, incoherent and confused and wondering, is this what's going on? And isn't that's him?
Right.
But so why would it, the translation be an evil spirit from Hashem?
That's what induced this.
So God wanted him to feel, because to me that means from a
presumably
putting it on to Hashem's will and not his,
some type of balance, some type of mixture. Yeah.
It's Hashem's will that he,
but it's not necessarily Hashem's will in terms of how he acts.
From Hashem.
But he has to if he's getting that will. Ellie's right.
It's black and white. It's not his doing. Mm-hmm. It's Hashem wanting, willing it that he does it. That translation has to be explained.
I mean, not has to be.
Okay. I don't know. What's telling, though, this time, is David is playing the music ki yom biyom. David is playing the music like he always does. But the pasuk ends by telling us, v'chanis Biyad Shaul. There was a spear in Shaul's hand. Part of the, perhaps part of the paranoia and the fear, I mean, it's not a king who's sitting in his palace, in his place where he lives. He doesn't have to be armed. The king has guards. The king has, if a king is sitting there holding his spear, it shows fear. It shows something that's not right. And Pasuk Yud Aleph, again, you're going, you know, I'll allow you to be the judge on how responsible you want Shaul to be for this decision. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayotel Shaul Esachanis, Shaul hurled the spear. Vayomer Ake B'David, and he said to himself, I'm gonna strike David, B'David U'Bakir, through David at the wall. Vayisov David Mipanav Pa'amayim. But David turned two times. And he wasn't hit. So Shaul threw a spear at David twice, and David wasn't hit. Now,
still has free will.
What's unclear, what's unclear from this pasuk, and this is going to sound strange to you, it's unclear if David knows that the spear was thrown at him. Or that maybe there was commotion, maybe there were other noises going on, and maybe David is walking around and playing music, mm-hmm. and so because there's no reaction, and later on. There's going to be another incident where David does react. And so that, it seems, and they're still going to, David's going to go on and marry his daughter very soon. You wouldn't marry the daughter of someone that just tried to kill you.
But Shaul does say it.
Shaul said it to himself.
I know that. He said it to himself?
Presumably.
He had to go and pick up his spear.
But it doesn't say he said it to himself.
That's like a double intention there.
We don't have David. So what we have here is we have Shaul's action and we do not have David's reaction. So that's...
Could it possibly be... that we're not talking about a physical spear, that we're talking about, you know, interpretively, you know, spear, because...
I don't know what the interpretive spear is. I don't know. You could. I won't judge how you take it.
Doesn't know that.
Shaul does
know that something said it.
Right.
Like spears are thrown at people.
And then, look at the reaction that Shaul has in Pasuk. Yud Gimel, or Yud Beis,
yeah.
I don't know which one. Vayira Shaul Milifnei David. And Shaul had a certain level of fear from before David. Ki haya Hashem imo, because Hashem was with him. Umeim Shaul sar, and from being with Shaul, Hashem has removed him. Meaning, recognizing that Hashem is with him is that how could it be Shaul is saying to himself, how could it be that I had such a close target and I missed him twice? I eluded him twice. It must be that God is on his side and God is saving him. And God is with him. So at this point, Shaul goes back to a thought, Pasuk Yud Dalet, Vayisireu Shaul me'imo. Shaul removes David from being with him. Vayisimeilo sar elef, and he appoints him to be an officer of the thousands, meaning a certain officer in the army. Vayetzei vayavo lifnei ha'am, and he went out to be amongst the people. And again, thinking that perhaps being in battle, things will kind of handle David that way. And perhaps also recognizing that keeping him exactly where, keeping him precisely in that's not, meaning if you can't get him in the palace, just one-on-one, then maybe some other plan is necessary. Pasuk Tesvav. But again, we hear, Vayhi David, l'chol d'rachav, maskil, v'Hashem imo. David was successful in all of his ways, and Hashem was with him. Anything David did, this now we're talking about militarily, was successful. Pasuk. Is it Tesvav? Now on the Tesvav. Vayar Shaul Asherhu Maskil Ma'od. And Shaul saw that David was being so successful. Vayagar Mipanov. Vayagar, the Mitzvah Sion says, is fear. He was afraid of him. He was afraid of him, not necessarily afraid of him that David was going to meet him in a dark alley and take him out. But he was afraid what was becoming of David. That probably leads, you know, here the art school uses the word intimidated. The original way to translate yagar is pachad. But it's not, again, it's not a fear. And specifically, we're going to see David, and this, some of us know this because we know the story. David is given numerous opportunities to actually hurt Shaul. And he has every good reason in the world to hurt Shaul because Shaul had a manhunt out for David. And each time, specifically, there are going to be two main times where David does not hurt Shaul. And he even calls out and says, listen, I could have gotten you and I didn't. Doesn't that show that I don't want you? So, Vayagar Mipanav is more the fear of what David was becoming, the reputation, and the fear that David could dispose him as king.
I don't understand how Vayagar is pachad. Is it the Shoresh Gar? How did they get to fear from Vayagar?
So the Mitzvah Tzion quotes Bamidbar 22:3.
It's been used before.
Yeah. Do we have... brand new Bamid Bar Chumash over here. Vayagar Moav. Oh, here. Vayar Balak ben Tzipor. Eiz kol asher asa Yisrael le'amori. Balak, the son of Tzipor, saw that everything the Jews did to the Amorites. Vayagar Moav mipnei ha'am me'od. He ravhu vayakatz moav mitnei bnei Yisrael. So there, it's also translated terrified, and the Aramaic translation of vayagar's udechel is like trembling. So,
it says intimidated.
Awe is not trembling. You're on 15. Are you
right? So I mean, here in Parshas Balak, it definitely means fear. That's why Balak says, "Okay, we can't fight them. Let's go hire Bilam to curse them." So again, it's how you translate it. Again, I'm not the expert in the grammar. He's successful, David's successful, and Shaul sees that, and Shaul is afraid. V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda ohives David. All of Yisrael and Yehuda love David. Ki hu yotzei uval lifneihem, because he went out before them, he represented them, he was involved in the army. Here we do see a mentioning, just in passing, of Yisrael and Yehuda, which is just small hints that the unfortunate eventual rift between the Malchus Yisrael and the Malchus Yehuda, the seeds for Yehuda being kind of looked at differently was there. We saw when Shaul counted his army twice, it told us the soldiers of Yisrael and the soldiers of Yehuda, the soldiers of Yehuda. Here in this phrase, we kind of see, and it makes good sense for Yehuda to be in favor of David because he's a Judean. He comes from the tribe of Yehuda, but here it's everyone. V'chol Yisrael, So this, I mean, this phrase, there's no, this is a very innocent phrase, V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda. It's just a hinting. Why would you even separate them? Why not just say V'chol Yisrael? Next pasuk. Vayomer Shaul el David. Shaul says to David, all right, this is now a new plan. Hine biti hagdola meirav. Behold, my older daughter meirav. Osa her etain lachalisha. I will give to you for a wife. Ach heyeli leven chayil vilachim milchamos Hashem. So I'm going to give her to you, but you need to become more of a warrior, more of a ben chayil, to fight the wars of Hashem in order to have my daughter's hand in marriage. Vishal amar al tihi yadi bo usi bo yad plishtim. So what is Shaul saying to himself? By you marrying my daughter and you now needing to have more of a prominent position in the army, Al ti yadi bo, my hand doesn't have to be against him. Let me let the plishtim handle him. Now, whether this is a rational thought or not, meaning, if you're going to understand that David had the military prowess to take down Goliath, so how are the plishtim going to get him? But if you look at it like it was a coincidence, it was a fluke that David was able to take out, right, that lucky slingshot. How many times is he going to be able to sling that stone exactly like that? So let the plishtim handle him. In the back of our minds, and I didn't see anyone deal with it, we know that one of the quote-unquote rewards for fighting Goliath was going to be able to marry one of the daughters. So why is there still strings attached? I'm not sure. The answer might be that this exact reason, meaning there wasn't supposed to be strings attached. Shaul puts more strings attached because he wants to make sure that David doesn't become, you know, marry a princess, put his feet up and lead a life in the palace. He's going to marry a princess, but he's going to still be out there in the battlefront. Pasuk Yirches. Vayomer David el Shaul. David responded to Shaul, and it's the first time in a while that David's speaking. At least that's recorded for us. Vayomer David el Shaul. David says to Shaul, "Mi anochi? Who am I? Umi chayai? And what is my life worth? Mishpachas avi biyisrael. Umi chayai mishpachas avi biyisrael. What is my life or my father's family in Israel? Ki ech hasan lamelech, that I should become the son-in-law of the king. It doesn't make any good sense. I'm not qualified to marry into the king's family." That's David's personal reaction, and it's showing a certain level of humility. I don't think David's responding like in a way saying, you know, I've noticed that you're not so rational towards me, and therefore I don't want to, you know, this is a nice way of saying thanks, but no thanks. I don't think there's that. I think it's just David just being modest. Now, it happens to be, you could pause and ask yourself, well, who should marry the king's daughter? This is the first time that there's ever been royalty. This is the first princess that has to get married. You know, what are the... Nowadays, we would say, oh, based on what happened, that it's always the wealthy, whatever, advisor of the king, that his daughter marries the king's son. Okay, so we understand. But here, and we know that the tribe of Yehuda is a little more prominent than some of the other tribes, and David is from Yehuda, but David seems to be going with saying that I, who am I, which happens to be, I just thought of it, that's very similar to how Shaul reacted when Shmuel anointed him and told him. He basically said, "No, I'm from like the lowest of the families of Binyamin. Like, who am I?" Similar reaction. Pasuk Yotes, Vayhi be'es teis es meirav bas Shaul David. And it happened when the time came to give Meirav, the daughter of Shaul, to David, that he nitna le'adriel hamecholasi le'isha. But she was given instead, as a wife, Shaul switched it on him and gave her as a wife to someone named Adriel. Perhaps because David Shaul thought that his next daughter might be a better candidate. Because again, Shaul's intention is not for this to be a marriage made in paradise. Shaul wanted that his daughter would stay on his side and would perhaps get rid of David. So the pasuk goes on to say, "Vateahav Michal ba Shaul es David." We hear about Michal, who had an affinity. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, had an affinity towards David. Vayagidu l'Shaul vayishar David be'inav. And it was told to Shaul vayishar David be'inav. And now he thinks this will be a good idea. So I know we're in the middle of the story, but Bez Hashem, we will continue next week.
And Shmuel is nowhere. We don't know where he is.